I can't do this. I'm not Percy. I'm not Sailor. This is not my life.
I lowered myself to be on her eye level, scooping her face in my palms, my pulse rabbited. Bollocks, I was going to have a heart attack, wasn't I? Well, it's been a pleasure. Literally. Look at me now, Swevin. She tilted her head up, blinking back at me, her eyes shiny with unshed tears. I only choose the best for myself. Suits, cars, properties, restaurants. That's the way I'm wired. Trust me when I say I was not light-hearted when I chose you as the mother of my child. You're clever, independent, shrewd, creative, funny, and so help me God, a bit of a nutter. But you are also responsible, stable, strong, and level-headed. You're going to be an amazing mother, the best to walk upon this earth. Her chest heaved and she looked like she was on the brink of a sob. What's wrong now, darling?
You forgot, pretty,
she moaned. We both started laughing. She lost her balance, falling backward. Not wanting her to hit the carpeted floor, I pulled her with me and fell down to the carpet myself, using my body as a cushion for her, our legs laced together. Sorry, darling, but you're far from pretty. She pretended to throw a jab at my chest. I caught her wrist and gave it a soft bite. Gorgeous, however. Her lips were on mine in no time, hot and wet and demanding. Her tongue slipped through mine playfully, stroking and teasing. I tore at her clothes, ripping her hoodie from the collar, careful not to hurt her. Her hands were all over me, her mouth too. I didn't want to draw a breath, to give her time to change her mind. She was undressed before she could blink. I was still fully clothed when I propped her back against the bed base, my tongue sliding along the back of her knee, up toward her inner thigh, teasing a sensitive spot that made her entire body shiver violently. My lips found the sweet flower between her legs, and I sucked and bit and blew on it until she came, shoving my tongue into her to feel her muscles clenching it greedily. She hissed, her eyes widening, like she remembered something. I thought it was peculiar, the way she reacted, but then she shook her head, squeezing her eyes shut. Continue. Moving up to kissing her belly, I pressed hot kisses on both her tits, nibbling my way up her throat to her lips. Devon, please, fuck me. All in good time, Swevin. She reached to undo my trousers. I could feel the pearl of pre-cum gluing my cock to the cloth of my briefs. Belle freed my cock from the confines of my clothes and mumbled into our dirty kiss. Say that again. Say what? I asked, sliding into her there on the floor, finding her wet and ready for me. My nickname? Call me that. She matched the rhythm of my thrusts. Swevin, I kissed her lips. Thrust. Again. Swevin. Thrust. Swevin. 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 Thrust. 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 I plastered my forehead to hers as I drove into her faster and harder. I'm going to come.
Come inside me.
She clawed her nails into my skin, marking me, making sure Louisa knew.
I want to feel all of you.
My grip on her tightened. Her muscles quaked as I felt my hot cum sliding into her. We were both sweaty and spent when I rolled off of her, breathing hard and staring at the ceiling. She was the first one to talk.
I was abused when I was a kid. To this day, nobody knows.
My whole body tensed. I grabbed her hand instinctively, even before I turned to look at her. I waited for more. She continued staring at the ceiling, avoiding my gaze. When it was obvious she wasn't in the mood to share more than the bare bones, I tentatively asked, "Who was it?" She smiled grimly. "The usual suspect." "How long did it go for?"
"I don't remember. I was too, I don't know, deep in denial."
"Why'd you keep it a secret?" I propped up on my elbows. I knew before she even told me her family and friends weren't aware of the situation. I thought back to her awkward conversation with her father and chanted in my head, "No way, no way, no bloody way." Her father did not abuse her, because if he did, I'd have to kill him and I was not built for prison life. "Shit, I can't believe I'm telling you," she sniffed, the first tear falling down her cheek, sliding toward her ear. I held my breath, and for the first time in my life, prayed to God that she wouldn't stop, that she would step out from behind those high walls she surrounded herself with, open the door, and let me in. I was always the tomboy, the troublemaker. I didn't want to be the cause of yet another problem. Dumb, I know, but I was tired of being the bearer of bad news, the one who always got everyone into trouble. But at the same time, confronting him meant running the risk of everyone finding out. So I just bottled it in. For a while, I mean. And then another thing happened. She stopped, closing her eyes again, trying to swallow the lump in her throat and failing. Belle wasn't like other women. She was the type of girl who'd take her secrets to her grave. But this already was enough. It meant the world to me that she chose to tell me. The two men I trusted and loved the most turned their backs on me, each of them in his own way. This no trusting, no getting attached vibe you're getting, that's my fuck you to your gender, Devin. If I decide to trust again and get hurt, it'd be the end of me. This is why I keep resisting you every step of the way. Whatever you're feeling, I feel it 10 times over. But it's not worth it for me. Either I kill my feelings, or my feelings kill me. I brushed a thumb over her sunshine hair, tucking it behind her ear. Darling Swevin, what's a little death in the grand scheme of things? This unbearable, infuriating woman truly understood me, my quirks, my eccentric ways. Mostly, our time together was frustrating and bad, but when it was good, when the walls came down, it was the best I'd ever had. Emma Belle turned to look at me for the first time since she started telling me her story. Enough about me. So what made you claustrophobic, Dev? A truth for a truth. You promised to share when I gained your trust, and I think I'm there. Tell me what happened. And so I did. Past. The dumbwaiter was the size of a bookcase when I was first shoved into it at age 4. Like a baby in the womb, it was spacious enough for me to move my limbs, but still small enough that I needed to crouch. By age 10, my legs were too long, my arms too gangly to fit into it properly. And at 14, it felt like being shoved into a sardine tin with 15 more Devons. I could barely breathe. The trouble was, I kept on growing and the dumbwaiter stayed the exact same size. A small, measly hole. I didn't always hate it. At first, as a wee boy, I even learned to appreciate it. Spent my time thinking about what I wanted to be when I grew up, fireman, and later on about girls I liked and tricks I'd learned at fencing lessons and what it would feel like to be a bug, or an umbrella, or a teacup. It all went to hell one day when I was 11. I'd done something particularly nasty to upset my father, snuck into his office and stole his poker, then used it as a sword to fight with a tree. That poker was vintage and cost more than my life, my father had explained when he caught me with the thing broken in half. The tree had obviously won. I was thrown into the dumbwaiter for the evening. Mummy and Cecilia were away, visiting relatives up in Yorkshire. I wanted to go with them. I never wanted to stay all by myself with Papa. But Mummy said I couldn't miss an entire weekend's worth of fencing sessions with my sabreur. Plus, you haven't been spending enough time with Papa. A bit of bonding time for you two is just what the doctor ordered. So there I was, in the dumbwaiter, thinking about what it must feel like to be a bottle carrying a letter at sea. or cracked pavement, or a coffee mug in a busy London cafe. That should have been it. Another night in the dumbwaiter, followed by a morning drenched with silence and frequent trips to the loo to make up for the time I had to hold it in when I was caged. Only it wasn't. Because on that particular day came a storm so big and so terrible, it knocked out the electricity. My father rushed to the servants' cottages, where the power was still on, to spend the night and perhaps be entertained by one of the maids, something I knew he did when Mummy wasn't home. He forgot one thing. Me. I noticed the leak in the dumbwaiter when a persistent trickle of water kept falling on my face, interrupting my sleep. I was all mangled inside myself, pressed against all four walls. I ached to move, to stretch, to crane my neck. When I woke up in a flurry, the water had already reached my waist. I began banging on the door, crying, screaming, raking my fingernails over the wooden thing to try and pry it open. I broke my fingernails and tore my own flesh trying to get out of there. And the worst part was, I knew I stood no chance. My family wasn't in the house. My father left me for dead. Deliberately or not, I didn't know, and at that point couldn't care less. If I died, they could try for another. My father would finally have the son he always wanted, strong and tough as nails and never scared. The water came all the way to my neck when I heard thudding across the hallway. Footsteps. By that time, I was almost drunk with exhaustion and already came to peace with my fate. All I wanted was for death to be quick about it. But this gave me new hope. I banged and I screamed and splashed, trying to draw attention to myself, swallowing water in the process.
Devin? Devin?
The voice was muffled by the water. My head was going under, but I could still hear it. Finally, the dumbwaiter door pushed open. Gallons of water poured out of it, and so did I. I fell down like a brick at the legs of the person who was now my savior, the saint who gave me mercy. I choked and flailed like a fish out of water. Relief made me pee my pants, but I didn't think anyone could tell. Looking up, I saw Louisa. Lou, I choked. My voice was so hoarse you could hardly hear it.
Oh, Devi, oh God, we were meant to meet up, don't you remember? You never showed up at the barn, so I sent for you, but the driver didn't want to leave the car, so I asked him to drive me here. The front doors were locked, but then I remembered you told me where the spare keys were.
She fell to her knees, pulling me into her arms. Her voice hovered over my head like a cloud as I drifted in and out of consciousness.
I promised I would always have your back,
I heard her say.
I'm so glad I got to you in time.
We hugged on the floor. I slackened against her, my body so much heavier than hers. And still, she handled my weight without complaint. Thudding came from the stairs, and in the darkened hallway loomed the shadow of my father, big and bad and imposing.
What did you do, you stupid girl? He growled, seething. He was supposed to die.
Swevin was crying. She didn't even try to hide it for a change. Tears ran down her cheeks, some slipping into her mouth, others rolling down her neck.
I can't believe the bastard put you through that. No wonder you ran away and refused to do what he wanted you to. Jesus. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Her whole body was quaking back and forth.
You looked death in the eye, Devin.
Without blinking, I pressed her knuckles over my lips, relishing the privilege of touching her. You told me what made a hole in your heart, and this is why I have one in mine. This is why I've never gotten married, why I hadn't started a family. Something inside me knew that getting all the things I prevented Lou from having was just wrong. I owe her my life.
She did what any decent person would do.
Is that so? I asked idly. Perhaps I haven't met many decent people in my life.
Not wanting to be alone is not a sin.
Then why'd you give yourself the exact same fate? I murmured into her hand. She drew back, making a snow angel on the carpeted floor. Pouting and struggling to keep her sniffles to a minimum, she looked half girl, half woman. A pregnant vision stuck in limbo between two worlds. Too wise for her years and too scared to fall in love.
Look what you've done. Now I can't even hate her properly.
Belle sighed.
She saved you, after all.
She used that fake, exaggerated British accent she put on to hide her feelings when she was hurting. I laughed, rolling over her, kissing her face, licking those salty tears away, my knee prying her legs open as I flicked my thumb along her nipple. It was just like me to fall in love with the craziest woman on the planet.
Chapter 25. Belle. 14 years old. Coach Locken comes back to school 4 days after his son, Stephen Locken Jr., is born. His chest looks broader, his smile bigger, and I don't know why, but I swear he looks more grown up. His sudden maturity grosses me out. I show up to practice. There's no reason to leave a perfectly good scholarship on the table just because this guy is a grade-A asshole, but if he thinks I'm going to let him eat me out again, he is in for an unpleasant surprise. And probably a kick in the balls, too. Practice goes smoothly, considering I want to keel over and throw up every time I feel his eyes on my legs. I catch Locken trying to lock gazes with me a few times, but I avert my stare to avoid him. When practice is over, he lets everyone go and claps my shoulder like a friendly uncle.
Penrose, come see me at my office.
I have calc in 5 minutes, coach. Can we talk here? I ask very loudly, straightening my spine to show off my height. Everyone stops and stares. Ross raises an eyebrow. I realize that while I was under a teeny bopper-induced haze, everybody on the team figured out there's something going on between coach and me. My face feels hot from the inside. For the first time, I see Coach looking lost and a little shell-shocked. He recovers quickly.
Yeah, sure. Here, let's sit on the bench.
We do. We sit at a respectable distance from one another, but I still feel sick. I want to punch him in the face. I hate feeling stupid, and I feel like he took advantage of me. I play with the hem of my shorts. Congratulations on Stephen Jr. I blurt out. And the Kia Rio. I can't keep the anger from my voice, and you know what? Screw it. I don't need to. He lied to me.
So that's what it's about.
He scrubs his stubble with his knuckles, looking like he hasn't slept all week.
You knew I was going to become a father, Emma Belle.
I didn't know you're still with her. It's weird even talking about it. I feel like a grown-up in a TV show. I've only started getting regular periods 3 months ago, so this is a bit out there.
I wasn't,
he says urgently, and I can tell by the twitch of his hands that he wants to gather me in his arms and demand my attention, but he doesn't.
I haven't been with her for 3 months. Brenda, giving birth in Boston, was always the plan, and the week she came back ahead of her due date, well, one thing led to another, and we decided to give it another chance. For Stephen.
Did you sleep with her? I ask. I don't know what authority I have to ask him that. He looks away, his jaw clenching. I snort out a humorless laugh. Of course you slept with her.
What was I supposed to do?
He asks through gritted teeth.
It's not like my girlfriend puts out.
His girlfriend. That's what I was now. Even though I thought I'd feel good about it, all I felt was dull regret. How could I have been so stupid to start this with him? I'm not your girlfriend. I'm not even sure I'm your Harrier, but what I definitely am is out of here. I stand up.
Penrose,
he whisper barks.
Sit your ass down, we're not done yet.
I do as I'm told, but this time, and this is the real kicker, not because I want to hear his lame excuses, but because I have to. He's my coach, And now I'm starting to see the similarities between Locken and that geography teacher, Creeper.
Look, this thing with me and Brenda, it's not gonna last. It's you I want. I've made that clear. I don't want to come between you and the mother of your child.
As I say it, I realize it's not only because I feel like a piece of flaming shit for doing what I did with him, a married man. This whole thing's just lost its shine. Days ago, in the cafeteria, as I craned my neck to listen to crumbs of information about him and his wife from the lunch duty teachers, it dawned on me that this was all a huge mistake. What kind of man sleeps with his student? What kind of man cheats on his pregnant wife? Not a worthy one. That's who.
You're not coming between anything. I want you. I love you. I haven't stopped thinking about you all week.
There's a note of urgency in Coach's tone. I swing my gaze to look at him, but stand up from the bench nonetheless. It probably looks weird from afar if someone sees us. Me walking away from him and not vice versa. His love declaration falls flat. I'm sorry. I don't love you back.
I know you do.
No, I don't. Truth is, I don't know what I feel or don't feel. I just know I'm in over my head. I have to untangle myself from the situation fast.
This conversation is not over,
he warns me, getting up after me and looking around like a thief in the night before slipping out of someone's window. I turn my back on him and walk away, thinking, yes, it is. Chapter 26. Belle. The man was going to completely destroy me, and there was nothing I could do but watch him from a front row seat. I knew it the moment he put his hands on my stomach. Baby Whitehall fluttered when it happened. It felt like butterflies stretching their wings for the very first time inside my belly. The baby knew her dad had touched her for the first time and was reacting to him. Everything happened so fast after that. The kisses, the love bites, the skin on skin, the secrets. It felt like falling off a cliff. Falling, 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 and still not trying to grab onto anything to stop what was happening. The deep end didn't feel so deep when you never wanted to get out of it. This was why falling in love was a dangerous game. It gave you the worst thing a girl like me could have. Hope. The next evening, I skipped coming home early after I finished the paperwork at Madame Mayhem. I was in a weird mood. On edge. I didn't want to come back home just to find out Devin was still out with Miss Fancy Pants. The alternative of Devin being home and sitting me down for a grown-up talk was equally as terrifying. What could I say to him? Yesterday had changed nothing. I was still me, and he was still him. We still had holes in our hearts. His family would never accept me and would go through bankruptcy if he didn't marry Louisa. And me? I was still the same girl who closed her eyes to dream and instead saw Mr. Locken. Instead of going home, I met with Ashling, Sailor, and Persephone at the latter's mansion for an evening of fried clam plates and beers. Sticking to soda was hard, but necessary. Pregnancy brought with it disgust of numerous things. Coffee, red meat, and most types of fish, but I still longed for a glass of wine every now and again. Well, what kind of symptoms are you having during your pregnancy? Sailor knocked down her drink like an Irish, well, sailor. When I was pregnant with Rooney, my hoo-ha turned purple. It was horrible. She paused. I mean, especially for Hunter, I wasn't in a position to look at it. Literally. Percy put a hand to her mouth. Thank you, TMI queen. Sailor shrugged, swiping a French fry and a bowl of ketchup. Just kidding. He kind of liked it. It made him feel like he was having alien sex. I used to wet my pants, constantly. Ashling volunteered casually, popping a fried clam into her mouth. I spat my soda, peppering it all over my friends. Well, this was casual. Ambrose put a lot of pressure on my bladder. At first, it only happened when I coughed or sneezed. By the third trimester, all I had to do was bend over to put my socks on, and whoops, I peed my pants. I think I was the only pregnant woman on planet Earth who still used sanitary pads every day. Whenever I bought some at the local Walmart, the cashier looked at me weird, like, "You know you don't need them, right?" And I wanted to scream at her that I was a doctor. "What about you?" I turned to my perfect sister, who had two perfect pregnancies and delivered babies that were beautiful and good sleepers from day one. Percy, God bless, was incapable of imperfections. She scrunched her nose, blushing. "What?" Sailor demanded, grinning, a French fry hanging like a cigarette from the corner of her mouth. "Tell us, asshole." "Well," Percy tucked her hair behind her ear nervously, "it wasn't a symptom, per se." All of us were now leaning toward her at the dining table, eyes wide, dying to know. "It was just that during both pregnancies, I was really, really horny." "You mean you needed vitamin D every day?" Sailor arched an eyebrow. Percy laughed. "Yeah, I wanted it a little rough. And Killian, well, he was torn between giving me what I wanted and making sure we didn't do anything stupid." We all nodded, considering this. "Now your turn," Percy giggled, throwing a French fry at me. It felt a lot like when we were teenagers, the ease that came with being together. I knew we would always have each other. It gave me great comfort now that my feelings were all pretzeled up about Devon. "I think my main symptom is insanity," I admitted. Munching on my corn on the cob, I knew I was going to regret later on when I had to floss for 2 hours straight. "Because I think I'm kind of starting to like Devon. I mean, for real?" Utensils clattered. Percy dropped a piece of fried clam on the floor, making no move to pick it up, still staring at me. Sailor and Ashling looked at each other like they were contemplating whether to check my temperature or not. Percy was the first to clear her throat, proceeding with caution. "Elaborate, please." I told them everything about the will, the inheritance, and the issues that came with it. About Devon's mother and sister and bankruptcy. I told them about his late nights with Louisa and about how I pushed him into her arms. How I played my cards in the worst possible way. I told them everything other than the secrets Devon and I had shared. The holes in our hearts part. After I was done, the entire table fell silent. Sailor seemed to recover before everyone else. She leaned back in her chair, green eyes wide, and blew out air. "Damn." I buried my face in my hands. No good advice was ever prefaced by the word "damn." Percy's staff began moving our plates away, making themselves invisible. For the millionth time, I wondered how my sister, who'd come from such humble beginnings, could get used to this kind of wealth. "Any more helpful feedback?" I raised my eyebrows. "It's just that you've never really shown interest in anyone like that before, is all." Sailor looked at Ashling and Percy for help. Saw that they were still processing, then added hastily, "I may or may not have told him to not even try and just marry Louisa to spare himself the heartache. I'm sorry, Belle, when you mentioned it the other day, it seemed like you were totally fine with them tying the knot." I wanted to throw up, but smiled faintly. I needed to get up and leave. Maybe call Devon on my way home. He'd come, even if he was with Louisa. That was the kind of man he was. Ashling rubbed her temple, her thick, dark eyebrows drawn together. "This is wrong. This is all wrong. You know you have to fight for him, right?" Easy for her to say. For all her sweetness, Ashling was vicious when it came to love. She fought tooth and nail to win her husband after pining for him for years. And ruin his family's life. I let my head fall to the table. "His sister and mother are not your problem," Sailor said flatly. Plus, he'll be ruining his own life and Louisa's if he marries her while he is in love with you.
Percy finally chimed in. We were interrupted by the staff again. This time, they brought dessert and tea. Custard, lemon meringue, and fat pieces of nougat. We waited until they were gone before we spoke again.
Are you crazy?
I whisper shouted, sticking my spoon deep into the custard.
He's not in love with me.
This is amazing, Aisling murmured around her own spoon, pointing at the custard.
And in my humble opinion, as the person with the highest IQ in the room, he is in love with you.
Super humble, Sailor popped a piece of nougat into her mouth.
But I actually agree.
You have to give him the chance to prove himself, Belle. If he knew how you felt, he wouldn't even pay Louisa any attention.
I don't know what kind of relationship they have.
I helped myself to a lemon meringue. Okay. Maybe I did have a pregnancy symptom in the form of wanting to eat anything that wasn't nailed to the floor.
Time to ask, Sailor said. The thing about men is, Percy sipped her tea, a faraway expression painted on her face. Sometimes they require a little push to realize that what they need and what they want is in front of them and can be found in the same woman.
Amen to that. Aisling lifted her teacup in the air, making a toast.
I'm not like you guys, I shook my head. I don't have the ability to make someone else happy. As soon as I become vulnerable to them, it's game over. I do something horrible and try to push them away. So I can't promise him all the things you've given to your husbands. The family, the children, the, you know, unconditional love and shit.
I could tell from the looks on my friends' and sisters' faces that I did not manage to make my point across with tact or finesse.
Is that all we're good for? Making our so-called men happy?
Sailor asked, with a humorless smile on her face.
I'm only a former Olympic archer and the owner of one of the biggest food blogs in the country. What do I know about running a business or having a life outside of marriage?
She was, indeed, all those things. But she had also married into a wealthy family and had come from one, so she had nothing to prove to anyone.
And I'm just a doctor, Aisling took another sip of her tea. Definitely not as earth-shatteringly important or as influential as you.
Persephone, who didn't have a day job, was the only silent one, so I made a point of turning toward her to say,
sorry. I didn't mean it like that.
Like what? She sat back, looking perfectly composed and unaffected.
Oh, I may not work 9 to 5 anymore, but I throw fundraiser events that raise millions of dollars for kids with needs, women's shelters, and animals who have been abused. I feel incredibly fulfilled and don't need anyone's permission to call myself a feminist.
Okay. Maybe they all had a point.
A woman is a woman. Percy put a hand on my shoulder, and I wondered since when had the roles reversed. She'd become the wise and worldly one, and I, the one in dire need of advice. A woman is a wonder. We are programmed to do and be everything we want to be. Don't sell yourself short. Whatever Devon saw in you is still somewhere inside. Look for it hard enough, and you'll find it, Percy added. Could I really salvage what I had with Devon? The Whitehalls wanted me out of the picture, and Louisa was going to be a royal pain, pardon the pun. But other than them, what else stood between me and Devon? Nothing. Or rather, no one, other than one person. Myself. I left Persephone's house, driving on autopilot back to Devon's apartment, which was in the same Back Bay neighborhood. Drumming my fingers over my leg and thinking about my conversation with the girls, I took a right on Beacon Street, onto Commonwealth Avenue, then continued up to Arlington Street. When I stopped at a red traffic light, a motorcycle cut through the line of traffic out of nowhere. The rider put himself between me and a Buick in front of me, blocking my line of vision. His face was hidden by a black helmet, and he wore a black leather jacket. I let out a scream, my right leg hovering over the accelerator, wanting to run the human shit stain over before he pointed a gun at me. But the guy took something out of the front pocket of his jeans, a note, and slammed it over my windshield. The text was printed in Times New Roman. "Leave Boston before I kill you. This is your last warning." That was it. I was going to fucking murder somebody. I threw my car into park in the middle of traffic, grabbed the gun from my purse, and pushed my door open. Helmet guy shook his head, roared his engine, and drove off before my hand touched the sleeve of his leather jacket. Tearing the piece of paper from my windshield and pocketing it, I promised myself, whoever it was, I was going to make them suffer. When I got back home, Devin was there. He looked like he'd been there for a while, freshly showered and wearing designer sweatpants and a white V-neck. I didn't immediately tell him about what happened. He seemed happy and eager to spend time with me. Besides, I was going to handle it. The police were out of the question. They were useless, and after the reluctant response I'd gotten from them when I filed a complaint, I wasn't planning to go there again. But I was going to visit Sam Brennan tomorrow at his apartment and tell him he was going to offer me his services whether he wanted to or not, or I would tell on him to his wife. Even the shaky experience I went through this evening wasn't enough to throw me off balance. Usually, an encounter like that meant I had a couple of weeks at least of radio silence from whoever wanted to scare me. "Hello to my favorite person in the entire world," Devin greeted me warmly. I melted into a puddle of hormones and leaned into him before he crouched down to kiss my belly through my hot pink blouse. "Oh, you meant her," I murmured. He stood up to his full, impressive height, giving me a wink. "And hello to the woman who carries her." "So we are now in agreement that it's a girl." I kicked off my heels. Pregnancy was great, but that didn't mean I was going to start becoming best buddies with Lululemon and, God help us all, Crocs.
"I'm normally in agreement with you," he said easily.
I made my way to the kitchen, filled myself a tall glass of tap water and drank it in big gulps, shoving the biker to a corner of my mind, determined not to let the encounter ruin the evening for me. "I'm glad you're not with your girlfriend tonight," I commented. "Oops, never mind. I ruined the evening all by myself." Why couldn't I just say, "I'm glad you're not with Louisa," like a normal human being? Poor Devin. Even if we were going to end up together, he was going to grow to hate me.
"I think I'm looking at her."
"Hmm? What?" He sauntered toward me, undeterred. My heart kicked up again, now for an entirely different reason. To be someone's girlfriend, Devin's girlfriend, was a reality I'd never considered for myself. I had to admit, I didn't hate the sound of it. He took the glass from my hand and put it behind me on the marble counter before gathering my hands in his. A zap went through me. It felt so good, so right. I wanted to crawl out of my own body and run away somewhere where I'd be safe from him.
"Tell me yesterday was a mistake,"
he ordered, not asked.
"Tell me a million times it shouldn't have happened, and I still wouldn't believe you."
I swallowed hard, staring at the floor. Being vulnerable killed me, but I had to do it. "It wasn't."
"Was that so hard?"
he inquired softly. "Yes," I admitted flatly. He laughed, a low, sexy rumble that came from his chest.
"A weird animal anecdote to soothe your mind,"
he suggested, still holding my hands in his. "Please."
"Platypuses look like they have hot water bottles glued to their faces. You know, the ones our grandmothers like to shove under the blankets in the winter to keep warm."
I cackled, unable to stop myself, quaking shoulders and all. "Speaking of unfortunate faces, the Saiga antelope looks like it has a half-mast uncircumcised penis attached to its face."
"Now, what do you have against uncircumcised penises, Ms. Penrose?
I happen to be the proud owner of one. He jerked me into his hard body, and I giggled some more.
Nothing, Mr. Whitehall. Nothing at all.
His lips met mine, and the space between us was reduced to nothing. I clung on to him. His mouth smelled of spearmint and ice. Mine tasted of lemon meringue and custard and French fries. He stripped me fast, and I did the same, and for the first time in years, he was completely naked in front of me. In the kitchen. I dreamed about seeing you like this again for a long time. Another admission fell from my lips. There wasn't one moment from the first time I saw you when I didn't want to see you naked, Swithin. I took a step back, appreciating his physique. You're beautiful, I told him. You're crushing my heart, he answered. And then we were on the floor, making love. When we finished, spent and satisfied, he dragged me to the couch where he nestled me between his arms. I was draped across his body like a blanket. I liked it. Want to watch something? He murmured into my hair, turning on the TV. Like what? What do you like to watch? Money being handed to me or my bartenders, to be honest? Take your foot off the gas, love. You've made it in life. I gave it some genuine thought. Usually, at home, when I have a minute, I watch the trashiest thing my TV has to offer, like Too Hot to Handle, The Circle, Toddlers in Tiaras. If there's even the slightest chance I could be educated or provoked to form an opinion about something, I bail. What about you? I felt his chest shake with laughter over my back. He was warm everywhere. Delicious.
I mainly watch BBC News. The Sport Channel, sometimes Top Gear.
You're so British.
Yes, madam.
Why are you here if you still love and miss home so much? I turned my head to look at him. His eyes crinkled as he looked down at me, playing with locks of my hair.
I don't know, he said honestly,
and my heart sank.
Now that my father is no longer alive, I suppose I could go back. If it wasn't for the fact I now have a child to raise in America.
So you were going to move back?
No.
But I knew that now. I'd said it 100 times when I actually meant yes. Dev.
I don't want to be anywhere else. Now let's watch something that might cause you to think a little. How does that sound?
Horrible, I admitted. He laughed some more.
Good. Show me I'm worth it. Suffer a little with me.
We settled for something in between BBC News and my shows. A panel game show called Have I Got News for You? Presumably it was supposed to be funny. The crowd, and Devin, definitely laughed. But to me, it was just a reminder that he didn't really belong here with me. That I would be doing him a huge favor if I set him free and let him live his life with Louisa. Plus, I couldn't stress that enough, there was no way I was not messing this shit up. I'm still being followed. My admission came out of nowhere. Devin's chest hardened beneath me. I could feel his pulse quickening between our bodies. I closed my eyes and continued. A motorcycle cut me off in traffic today and slammed a note on my windshield. It said I should leave Boston. It was my last warning. The weird thing is, I took a breath. I get 2 different sets of threats. One claims they want to kill me and the other tells me to run away. It's almost like there are 2 forces who want me gone, but not for the same reason. People that have nothing to do with each other.
2,
he repeated, his voice cold and contemplative. 2.
Fuck.
It was a knowing fuck, or at least it sounded like it, but how could that be? How could he have any idea who was after me? Devin stood up, shoving his legs into his briefs with violent force.
We're calling the police right now.
A bitter laugh clogged my throat. I wanted to tell him I'd been there, done that, and nothing came of it. But the tone he took with me, so haughty, so patronizing, reminded me why men, like children, should be seen and not heard. You can't tell me what to do,
I jumped to my feet, pacing to the kitchen. Baby Whitehall kicked up a storm inside me, letting me know that she was just as scared and angry as I was. Devin chuckled sardonically. I can, and I fucking am. You're going to file a complaint at the police station. I'll come there with you, and also, you're officially on maternity leave from Madame Mayhem. His words did not bode well with my no-controlling-men rule. I let out a shrill laugh, diverting back to old habits, old lines, old, old, old dialogue of a woman who just couldn't let go of the past. Oh, Devin, you are so cute when you think you have power over me. This is not about me and my power, it's about your safety. You're going to the police. The look in his eyes broke me to pieces. I could swear he was about to cry. Cry from frustration because he couldn't get through to me. Now's a good time to just stop. Take a deep breath. Tell him you already went to the police, that it hadn't worked. Maybe you can find a solution together. But then I thought about Mr. Locken, promising me he was going to get me a scholarship to UCLA, telling me how much he cared. And Dad. I thought about him, too. Somehow that reminder hurt most of all. Am I? I plucked a cereal box from the counter and poured half of its contents into a bowl. Guess we'll just have to see about that. He turned around and stalked toward his home office. Soon after, I heard the door slam shut. I can't deal with her anymore, he roared from behind it. The cereal box slipped from between my fingers, its contents pouring on the floor. I plastered my forehead to the cool counter and closed my eyes. Almost. You almost managed to prevail. But you didn't. Chapter 27. Belle, 14 years old. Dad buys a baseball bat to shoo the boys away.
It's a good strategy.
He elbows me over casserole and soda at dinner time, winking.
You two are getting so tall. You're not kids anymore. I need an efficient weapon to chase all the boys away. What do you think, Percy? Can I take them all down?
She giggles, pressing her finger to a crumb and nibbling on it. You can do anything, Dad.
What about you, Belly Bell? Think your old man still got it?
I poke the green bean casserole with my fork, trying to muster a smile. My 15th birthday is coming up, and I don't know how to tell Dad the only so-called boy I have anything with is a 30-year-old father who is married and doesn't seem to get the hint that we're over. It's been 3 weeks since Coach came back to work. He's tried to corner me almost every day. I always dodge him, but it's getting harder and harder. The thing is, I can't tell anyone. Maybe if he wasn't married, if everyone wasn't fawning all over his baby, which his wife brought to school the other day in her new blue car. She pushed Stephen in a little stroller and stopped for everyone to coo over him. And then when Coach saw her there, he looked very flustered, almost apologetic, but had still kissed her on the lips before tucking her in the teacher's lounge. A story about a coach and a student getting busy together is shameful enough. But when you become a homewrecker too, no thanks. Don't hold your breath, Dad, I say finally. I'm not into the whole dating scene.
You will be at some point,
Dad sighs regretfully. My mother piles more casserole on his plate, laughing. Leave her alone, honey. Maybe she's not ready yet. I'm starting to think I'll never be ready. The next day, Coach Locken is in a sour mood. He makes mistakes, yells at us during practice, makes us do 100 push-ups because he says we were late, even though we weren't. Practice is excruciating. My knee is killing me, but I dare not complain because I don't want his hands anywhere near me, so I push through. Even when I can barely walk, it hurts so bad.
Penrose, see me in my office in 5,
he barks when we're done. I squirt water into my mouth, eyeing him with open resentment. Can't, Coach. I need to pick up my baby sister from the library. Not exactly a lie, although Percy is used to waiting for me.
She'll wait.
He storms off to his office. With a groan, I follow him.
I have to lock my jaw not to scream from pain because of my knee. My muscles are strained. I haven't had one of his massages in weeks. When we walk into his room, he locks the door again. This time, I feel nothing but dread. I'm on the defensive. My senses are on high alert.
Sit down,
he instructs. I do. He leans on his desk, folding his arms over his chest. I look the other way. I'm not going to cry, no matter what. He puts a hand on my thigh. My eyes jerk up, meeting his. Don't, I hiss.
Or what?
He lifts his eyebrows.
We both know you can't tell anyone what we did. I'm a married man. That makes you a little slut. No one will believe you, Emmabelle. It's going to be your word against mine, and I've worked at this school ever since I graduated from college and am well-loved and respected. Just get over your little petty drama and accept that this is the way things are going to be. I'm going to have to stick with Brenda for a little while longer.
Stay with her for eternity. I jump to my feet and try hard not to wince when my knee almost collapses into itself from the strain. It has nothing to do with me. I'm done.
That's where you're wrong.
His fingers lace around my arm. I pull away, but he tugs me back with force. He is going to leave a bruise, and I don't think he cares. Panic climbs up my throat. This is getting out of control. I need an out. I rack my brain for something to say that will make him leave me alone. I have a boyfriend, I blurt out. He gives me a pitiful look, cocking his head sideways.
Please don't insult my intelligence. We both know Ross Kendrick is gay.
It's not Ross, I protest. It's someone else. He's in college. He'll kick your ass if you get close to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's his name?
My eyes wildly scan the bookshelf behind his shoulder. Run Like the Wind by Jeff Perkins stands out. Jeff, I say, finding my voice. His name is Jeff, and we're in love. And you know what else? He's a football player and huge. He can kick your ass if you as much as try to touch me. I whirl, trying to make an escape to the door before he asks more questions about Jeff, but he catches the back of my hoodie and pulls me into a headlock, his lips finding the shell of my ear.
Well, tell Jeff to back off, because you already have a boyfriend.
I don't cry, but I don't try to fight my way out of his embrace either. I'm too scared he'll kill me right here and now.
Now tell me, Emmabelle, did he fuck you?
I know I should say no. Poking the bear is not a great idea, but I can't help it. I think I'll always be wired to fight back. Yeah, I say. He did, a few times. It was great. Stephen releases me unexpectedly, and I scramble to the door, unlocking it with shaky fingers and shooting out of there like an arrow. Close call, I think. But even hours after the incident, I still can't breathe. Because I know there's more coming.
Chapter 28. Devon. She wasn't going to the police. I was certain of that more than I was certain the sun would rise tomorrow in the east. Astronomy was full of unfathomable things. Swevin, however, was as predictable as a Swiss clock. Even if she thought she would go to the police tonight, she was going to wake up tomorrow morning and rebel against every notion that she should be careful, or timid, or scared. I didn't feel remotely bad about betraying her confidence when I called Sam as soon as she fell asleep, lighting up a much-needed rolly on the balcony of my bedroom overlooking the skyline of Boston. I pressed my elbows against the banisters, letting my head drop between my shoulders on a sigh. It's 11 o'clock at night, Sam greeted in his signature lackluster mannerism. You're still up, I said dryly. You didn't know that. I know everything. Good point, Sam said solemnly. What do you want? I need to hire you for something. That gave him pause. I was the only man in my social circle who did not hire Sam Brennan and his staff on retainer. I kept my hands, like my professional reputation, squeaky clean. But Emmabelle was about to change that.
She was about to change a lot of things. I heard Sam sucking on his electronic cigarette. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. We all fall in the same way. The fresh air swirled my blonde hair, whipping at my face. The cold tinge on my cheeks reminded me what I wished I could forget, that I actually cried a few minutes ago, or rather shed 3 full tears. And the fall always involves a woman, Sam concluded. Although it should be said, for a while there, I thought all I'd been dealing with was a stumble. He chuckled softly, and I could envision him shaking his head as he took another drag of his fake ciggy. How can I help? He asked finally. Emmabel is being followed. Ash told me something along those lines, Sam offered nonchalantly. Do you have any suspects? A bitter ex-employee, a woman who is hell-bent on marrying me. I took a deep breath, my jaw ticking in annoyance. And my mother? Luckily, Sam wasn't one for snarky comments. She's been trying to reach me, Sam said. Emmabel. I didn't take her calls. Why not? I felt my blood boiling with rage. Exercise and humility. I heard him toss the cigarette onto his desk, growing tired and frustrated of the unconvincing replacement. I wanted to see if she'd turn to Ash or you for help. It would do her good to be a little less prideful. She didn't ask me to call you. I'm going rogue on her ass. In fact, I specifically don't want you to contact her. All right. I'll email you a questionnaire. You'll have to fill it out completely. I need this employee Frank's address as soon as possible, I said. You'll get it, Sam said confidently. But Devin, yeah, I ain't cheap. I ain't poor. It positively killed me to use the word ain't. You might be, after putting me on retainer for a month or two. You don't need 2 months to solve this riddle. Plus, you are helping me keep the mother of my child safe. There's no price tag for that. I hung up, letting out a quick, angry breath. I looked around the universe, which in turn closed in on me. That was the thing about fearing confined places. Sometimes, when it got bad, your mere existence was enough to send you hyperventilating. Just like sometimes, in order to save an angel, you had to make a deal with the devil. I was on the threshold of Frank's house the next day, a few minutes shy of noon. Frank lived in Dorchester. His house had a rickety front porch, dilapidated roof, and a door with bullet holes in it. Nothing quite said welcome home like Full Metal Jacket-shaped holes in a door. I knocked, brushing my knuckles clean over my tweed jacket. Swevin didn't know it yet, but the minute she left the house today, whenever that would be, she was going to have 2 of Sam's men following her. Since Sam found out Frank's address overnight, I had to admit, begrudgingly, but only to myself, that he wasn't terrible at his job, although I still reserved the right to dislike him on the simple basis that he was, in fact, a cunt. Although I wasn't well-versed in liaising with men who'd tried to get their ex-employers killed, I felt an odd sense of accomplishment. I was taking care of the situation now. I never fancied myself anyone's knight in Prada armor, but here we were. The door whined open, and a screen door flapped right behind it. A spotty teenaged girl with ratty-looking hair and a huge pregnant belly stood in front of me, barefoot, wearing a military camouflage tunic and holed black leggings. She flinched when she saw me, taking a step back. "Frank ain't here," she began closing the door in my face. I sent an arm out, pushing it back open with a smile. "How do you know it is Frank I'm looking for?" She hugged the edge of the door, peering back at me with wild eyes. "Figured you're some type of big shot police officer or whatnot. Only 2 kind of people come to visit Frank, criminals and policemen. And you don't look like a criminal to me." A lovely endorsement, if ever I heard one. The girl wasn't wrong, which meant she, at the very least, had 2 brain cells to rub together. Hopefully, she was bright enough to recognize an opportunity when one knocked on her door. As if confirming my suspicion, a loud growl came from her pregnant belly. She winced, running a hand over her greasy roots. "Is that all?" She was about to close the door again. Are you hungry? I dipped my chin down to try and catch a gaze, but to no avail. Whoever Frank was, he'd trained her well to keep away from strangers. She shook her head. Because I can take care of that, I said kindly. I don't need no charity. My girlfriend is pregnant too. She is growing our child inside of her. I would hate to think she goes without food. For me, it's not charity. It's a necessity. She folded her lips on top of each other. I could tell she was at a breaking point. She was hungry. So hungry. Her legs were two toothpicks. The living room behind her looked like it had been trashed by every single squatter on the East Coast in the last decade.
Who are you? What do you want?
She asked, finally. The fact that she didn't slam the door in my face was an encouraging sign. She knew I could give her relief, an immediate remedy for her situation. I got her attention, and for now, that was enough. I'm looking for your boyfriend. I suspect he is planning to do a very bad thing.
Got no idea where he is. He's been gone for a whole week now. Wouldn't even pick up my calls. That doesn't surprise me.